Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We want to thank you for tuning in to another fine episode of Part 2 of American Education System, Ideological Intolerance on College Campuses, Part 2. Last week, we started with Professor Nicholas Giardone talking about the collapse of the American educational system and academic freedom, the overall what's going on college campuses across the country, and there's a lot of challenges that we have with our children as it relates to the college campuses. So without any further ado, we have Professor Nicholas Giardone in the studio. Welcome and good evening, sir.
How are you, Chauncey? Glad to be here.
I'm doing very, very well, sir. I just briefly mentioned before you came on into the studio to our listeners that last week was part one, and we were talking about the collapse of the American education system and academic freedom and the ideological intolerance on the college campuses. This is part two today. And I guess you'd like to start off, well, if you may, for my listeners, just give a brief introduction of yourself, Professor, and then we'll get right into it.
Sure. My name is Nick Giardone, and I'm a professor of political science over at Suffolk Community College. I've been teaching for about 14 years. I was also involved in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And as Chauncey said, we did discuss the collapse of the K-12 system last week, so this week it's a good idea to talk about what's going on in college campuses and the ideological intolerance that we're seeing.
Yes, and thank you, Nick. And I also wanted to mention, I'd be remiss, I keep forgetting that you were a member that was involved in Homeland Security. I am a retired fire captain. I was acting and deputy coordinator of the Office of Emergency Management, the third largest city in New Jersey. That would be a topic that maybe we can discuss on prior shows about emergency management, first responders, the coronavirus, and the like. But for today, we're going to stay on topic. And I'd like for you to share with us what does academic freedom mean, and why is it at this time in jeopardy?
Well, there's something that's going on, and it's mostly on the four-year university campuses. You don't see it a lot on the two-year community college level, but on the four-year schools, you see it often. So academic freedom is the right of the professor to teach pretty much any way they want to teach, to be able to say things that may be controversial. And the theory always was that you have to allow the professors to have that freedom, because we bring up complex issues, we bring up issues that may be controversial. And so there was always a worry that people would want to shut the professors down. I mean, imagine without academic freedom what the current environment would look like. But the problem is academic freedom is not offered to students, and it should be. Because students should be able to speak what their opinions are, and they should be able to speak and feel free without any fear of reprisals from professors or the campus or other student activity groups.
I agree 100%. I mean, the college campuses are for students to be able to critically think and defend their positions, and if that's being stymied, then that is not a healthy educational environment.
No, and the college campus is designed. I mean, that's the whole point of college, is speech and debate and to ask questions. Even if you agree or disagree, it's always good to ask questions, to be able to think critically about the issues. But unfortunately, what's happened over the years is you've had so many professors that are so intolerant to students that have different viewpoints from them. And we're talking about on the issues, and that's really disheartening, because what it does is it stymies debate and it forces students to shut down, to not engage in the classroom.
Exactly. And then what happens is then our children will not growing up challenging the things in society that might not be appropriate, or challenge policies to bring about some type of change. And it's sad
or
that
even challenge our professors.
Yes.
I encourage my students to challenge me. It keeps me on my toes. It keeps me fresh. I want my students to push back against me because then it makes me a better teacher and it makes them better students.
So Professor, so this is academic freedom is a challenge on four-year colleges and because of the liberal ideologic of professors teaching now that they want to teach subject matters that they believe in and subscribe to more than helping the students learn about their positions and why.
Well, I think there's two things going on. First of all, it certainly is the liberal bubble that exists at the college level. And there's no doubt that conservatives are well outnumbered on college campuses when it comes to faculty. And many professors, they've gotten their master's, many of them have PhDs, and so they get this authoritarian tendency that they know it all, that they have all the answers, that they went through all this schooling. They've never been in the real world, but they've always been in the academic world, and so they know what's better than the students know. See, the problem with professors is a lot of them operate in theory. They don't operate in reality. And so when students begin to push back, a lot of professors will be like, well, you know, this is an 18, 19, or 20-year-old kid. How can they possibly push back against me? It's almost as if they take offense when a student pushes back against what a professor says. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. As I said, professors should be encouraging that pushback.
You know, you remind me real quickly of my son, who just graduated Rutgers Business School with two degrees, one in economics and one in finance. And he told me about a story, exactly what you're talking about, that a teacher is teaching a business class, and my son says, have you ever been in business? And the professor said, no, then how can you teach business? If you never had a business and failed, you know, you have to participate at some level in a system that you're teaching about.
It's a great point, and it's one that often gets missed because you have a lot of professors that went straight from their PhDs to teaching full-time, whereas me, I had to go into the real world. So when I teach political science, I have an added advantage because I have real-world experience of what takes place behind the scenes. I was with New York State Office of Emergency Management, where I would coordinate with the federal level and the local level.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of things that you can't teach from a textbook, and that's part of the problem because, you know, a textbook can tell you how a bill is going to become a law, but a textbook is not going to tell you what really happens behind the scenes or the political jockeying that goes on. Same thing in emergency management. A textbook gives you a good framework and lets you learn the terminology of emergency management. However, having experience in natural disasters, that you can't learn from a textbook. And so real-world experience is really important, and a lot of these professors don't have this real-world experience. And so what they do is they're so vested in their beliefs, they're so vested in their ideology, they try and indoctrinate the students to believe exactly as they do.
And that is not healthy. It produces people like, unfortunately, AOC out of New York, who is a congresswoman and has no clue, no bearing, with all due respect, on reality when it comes to even, she can't even defend a position. But if that's what our college is producing, then yes, we are really in trouble. Because
well, it is a big
we
problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because and we talked about, I mean, this, you know, education is so important. I mean, you know, we're talking about higher ed, but even the developmental stages of grammar school and elementary school, you know, they're not being taught critical thinking. They're not being taught how to comprehend. They're not being, you know, how to debate, how to challenge ideas, how to gain creative thought. And our kids aren't even being challenged at the elementary level. If they're not going to be challenged there, then by the time they get to college, and if they're not being challenged, it's almost like you're throwing the kids out to the wolves.
But even in college, what makes it even worse is that they're it's almost as if there's a punishment if you don't adhere to what a professor is talking about. And just to give you an example, in the University of Arizona, a couple of years, it was either last year or the year before, there was a professor there that gave her students an option. They could either attend an anti-Trump rally or they could write a paper defending Donald Trump. Well, that's a punishment for those that support Donald Trump. Those that support President Trump don't want to attend an anti-Trump rally. At the same time, they don't want to be punished by having to write a 5 or 10 page paper of why they support it. Where you're rewarding the kids that don't like Donald Trump, hey, go to this rally. You don't have any other work that you have to do. So you're going to force basically Trump supporters to go to an anti-Trump rally simply so that they could get out of a writing assignment. And that's not right. No student should ever be in that position where they have to go against some of their beliefs simply because of what the professor feels. And we see it time and time again where students will shut down. They won't talk in classes because they don't want to be berated by the professor. They don't want to be attacked by the professor. And a lot of these kids are either spending good money to go to these schools or they're taking out student loans and racking up a lot of debt. And so they don't want to push back out of fear that they may get an F, that they may fail the class.
Yeah, I've experienced some of those issues with my daughter that's in college now. But, you know, thank goodness she's able to rise above with our support. There's a couple of other issues that you wanted to address today. The second one was
well, the indoctrination part we have. Then there's also censorship that's going on.
Okay.
So
yes.
Another thing that we're seeing on college campuses, and once again, it's a couple of different things that include censorship, but one is speech codes. Speech codes are extraordinarily dangerous, and we're seeing more and more colleges trying to adopt speech codes of what people can say, what people can't say, what's deemed offensive, what could get you suspended. And once again, we're talking about colleges that are supposed to be the bastions of dialogue, supposed to be the places where we exchange thoughts. And speech codes are designed to control. That's essentially what they're doing. It's trying to control behavior, trying to control thought. So a lot of colleges have developed these speech codes, and some of their words are absolutely ridiculous. You know, nationalism would be part of a speech code where people are deeming it offensive. And it's things like that that make it ridiculous. I mean, imagine being a parent sending your child to an $80,000 a year school, and yet your child can't say normal words that we may hard work, mankind. We can't say those words because they've been deemed as offensive. Because, you know, mankind used to signify men and women, but now a couple of idiots don't like it. So you have to say person kind and change terminology in that way. It really is ridiculous. And then you see censorship where they're banning conservative speakers to actually speak and present on their campuses.
Yes, you know, I'm aware that a lot of conservative speakers have been turned away. They won't allow them on college campuses. It's very, very troubling. What is the answer? Because it sounds like this has been going on for a couple of decades now, and from listening to you, Professor, it sounds like it's getting worse. I mean, of course, having shows like this and raising the level of consciousness with people and our listeners and students. But what else can we do? What can students do if they find themselves in a position where they're or a professor they don't feel is challenging them enough, or, like you said, dictating versus then allowing them to experience and grow?
Well, I think students, they can file their complaints at school. You know, whether those complaints are acted on, that's a different story. But they file a complaint with the head of the department, with the deans of the school, with the academic offices. They can file complaints as they should. Parents also need to take notes. And once again, you know, the parents have to get involved here because their checkbooks actually do speak volumes. And parents should be researching the schools before they send their children to those schools to determine if that school is right for them. And that's the reality. If the schools start losing money because, you know, they're unfriendly to other points of view, well, then those schools will take notice sooner or later, because the four-year university system is going to face a reckoning. There are a lot of people now that are looking at it, asking the question whether the investment is worth the piece of paper that you're going to get. And so the four-year universities, they better wake up and open their eyes before it's too late for them. But I do think people can push back. I also think more conservative-minded people need to get involved in academics. For years, conservatives stayed away from civil service. They stayed away from academics because they wanted to make money in the private sector. The private sector obviously pays a hell of a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think now we're seeing the results of the hands-off approach that conservatives took, where they didn't sacrifice. And instead of going for the money, well, hey, you know, we have a civic obligation to our country as well, and more conservatives need to start filling some of these positions.
I could not agree more. For those that are tuning in to U.S. national politics, I'm yours, Chauncey Brown. We have in the studio professor from Suffolk County Community College, Nicholas Gordino, political science professor, talking about education, the American education system, censorship, indoctrination, academic freedom. I do have a question. When parents and kids today, apparently schools now are making the censorship, is it policies? Are higher ed, are they making these policies within their school system? Or is it like an unwritten rule based on behavior, but they can't, is it a policy?
Well, the speech codes are policy. The speech codes do become policy. They get passed by the different boards that exist at whatever college or university. As far as mm-hmm. the censorship of conservative speakers, that's just the administration that kowtows to those that complain. So to give you an example, Condoleezza Rice a few years back was invited, I forget what university, I think it might have been Stanford or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the professors made a big stink. Now, Condoleezza Rice is not some like hardcore flaming conservative. I mean, she's pretty mild, middle-of-the-road Republican. Some would even
yes.
say that she's more to the left of the political spectrum on the Republican side. But they didn't like her position on the Iraq War. And that was why they started protesting. And so ultimately, the college caved to the pressure, and they pulled her invitation. And to me, that's horrendous, because once you give in to the mob, once you give in to these people, then they'll just do it again and again. What the administration should have said was, too bad, you don't like it, don't come to hear her speak. And we're going to let her speak. She's a former Secretary of State, someone that's certainly national security advisor, someone that's certainly well-qualified, well-respected. But see, the mob, I don't know why in this day and age these people give in to the mob, because the mob's a fringe minority. I mean, you know, let's be honest. I mean, most people don't waste their time going out and protesting. Most people don't waste their time trying to prevent people from other people from speaking. But the far-left mob does that, and they're successful, and so they continue to do it. And nobody stands up to them.
That is so sad. That is so sad and troubling.
The founding fathers created a system that was supposed to be immune from the mob. I mean, if you look at it, the way the system's created, and if you read the Federalist Papers, so the House of Representatives is supposed to represent what's in the best interest of the people. The Senate is supposed to represent what's in the best interest of the states, not the people. The people may have different interests than what's in the best interest of the states. And the president is supposed to be the representative for all the states combined. And our founders wanted it that way because they wanted the Senate immune from the mob, because mobs are bad. Mobs make really bad decisions. And you don't want mob rule. That's why we're a republic.
It's sad, Professor, that the lack of education that our children are not receiving, and we mentioned, I believe, on my last show with you, about civics, branches of government, what type of government we have. This is a republic. I mean, just basic fundamentals of American history is almost omitted from the elementary school level, and it's really sad that
and
politics...
It's having catastrophic consequences, too.
Yeah, I mean, I call it a politics is dominates the political environment instead of public service today, and it's sad, and it's, you could see it more so in urban settings. They've just, the politics is so rampant, I call it political corruption. You have the nepotism, the favoritism, and the patronage jobs and the contracts. You know, it's gotten so bad that they're not serving people anymore. And the result is drugs have been able to infiltrate these communities, you know, guns, and we can go on and on. Until we start electing people that understand or interstand the Constitution, understand civic responsibility, civic duty, public service, and you know, being a public servant, you know, and I think that we have a lot of candidates this year running in 2020. Actually, I'm hopeful from a lot of people that interviewed across the country running for Senate and Congress. I'm hopeful, and I hope that we do have a red wave because we have a lot of people that served in the military or served in public life or private life, but served in social services and education, people that have compassion for wanting to serve, and I hope that we do get a windfall of people that want to serve the public good and the public will to assist Donald Trump in changing the face of this nation, putting America first, and bringing some more public service back to government. And our last
make no mistake, what college
yes.
campuses, the government can play a role because a lot of these college campuses receive taxpayer funds. And so with our taxpayer funds, the colleges shouldn't be able to pick sides. They shouldn't be able to pick liberal views or conservative views. The reality is all views should prevail on college campuses.
Yes, and I definitely agree with you. When it's taxpayers' dollars, I believe the federal government has a role in how that money is dispersed, and there should be a quid pro quo with that money being how are the students are going to benefit from them federal dollars, and censorship it would not be allowed and things of that nature. We talked about, in the last few minutes we have, you want to talk about safe spaces. What are safe
yeah.
spaces in the college environment, and why are they necessary?
They're not necessary. It's the most illogical thing that you could possibly think of. So colleges have developed what's called safe spaces. So there are spaces that students could go to and feel safe where they won't be offended by other people's opinions. And it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard of. And remember, the whole point of college is to try and prepare students for the real world, where in the real world there are no safe spaces. You know, after your boss reams you out because they don't like a work product you develop, you can't tell your boss, hey, can I go to my safe space? You won't have a job if you do that. But at colleges, they're trying to pamper these kids to say, if anything's offensive, if you find anything offensive, just go to these safe spaces. And what they're doing is they're creating this culture that if someone disagrees with you, well, then that's offensive. And disagreement is not offensive. You know, we could disagree about a lot of issues. That's not offensive. It's just differing opinions. But we're trying to make it as if different opinions equals offensiveness. And once again, that's all the way to silence and control.
You know, I couldn't agree more. And that goes back to lack of education. As you know, it's called civil discourse. And we can agree to disagree. But it's sad that that professors and college institutions at this level want to create, like you said, you can't have a safe space in the real world. I don't understand why we are pampering these children, but you know, it's almost like we're not making them competitive for global society. It's like we're purposely trying to not prepare our children to be productive members in our society. And that's very troubling.
It is troubling. And the real world is cruel and it's difficult. And you're going to get knocked down time and time again. And if you don't know how to handle it because you've had safe spaces your whole life, you're doomed when you get into the real world.
Professor, have safe spaces, well, apparently they become popular. Are they becoming policy as well on college campuses and universities?
Yeah, the four-year schools, you'll see signs, university-designated signs that say this is a safe space.
That just undermines civil discourse in the classroom and in lecture halls.
Absolutely. I tell my students the first day of class that if they're easily offended, just drop my course because it's my job to offend each and every one of my students. I go out of my way to try and offend them because they have to learn to deal with other people's viewpoints and they have to be able to listen to other people's viewpoints and they have to learn how to engage in debate and civil discourse with other people. And if they don't like that, then they probably shouldn't take my class.
Well, you know, Professor, it's always a pleasure. We always learn a lot having you on the show. Maybe we can do a show talking about how we should engage in civil discourse in the college campuses and how we might be able to share with our listeners, be it parents or students.
Definitely.
You know, that is an important issue for us to be successful in our society. We only have a couple of minutes left. The time always goes fast, Professor. We hope that you will come back again and talk about other issues, as we just mentioned, civil discourse, debates on the college campuses. If individuals like to reach out to you, have a conversation, how can they get a hold of you?
They could go to thepasreport.com. PASReport.com. They could go to Twitter, follow me at PASReport is the Twitter handle, or they could go on any podcast platform, type in the PAS Report, and they could hear my weekly podcast.
I want to thank you again, Professor, for coming on tonight, and I hope that you
thank
will come
you for
back.
Having me.
And I hope that maybe next time we can talk about civil discourse, debate, divergent views. Hopefully you'll come back on and we can have a conversation about that on the college campus level.
Sounds great to me.
Okay. This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. You can follow us on Facebook at U.S. National Politics 101. You can also follow us on Twitter at U.S. Politics Today. We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to Professor Giordano today, talking about the American education system, the academic freedoms, censorship, safe spaces, and the like. And we hope that he'll come back on the show again, which he will, and talk about divergent views, civil discourse, and debating on college campus. We thank you all for tuning in. Have a blessed and a safe evening. God bless you all.